Good Erev Shabbos, Parshas Emor. Also happy, this is the evening of Lag BaOmer, so happy one as well. One of the great rabbinic leaders of 20th century American Jewry was a man by the name of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Besides for being a world-class Talmud Chacham Torah scholar, Rabbi Kamenetsky was a man with impeccable midos, character traits, and was known to be incredibly thoughtful and insightful. After Rabbi Kamenetsky passed away, one of his sons, Binyamin Kamenetsky, himself also a great rabbi, related the following story. It was the day of Binyamin's bar mitzvah, and his father called him into his study and said, "Binyamin, I have a special gift for you." Binyamin figured that due to his father being a great rabbi, he was confident that he would most certainly receive some special Judaica, a family heirloom of some sort. Perhaps it would be a special sefer, a sidur, maybe a kiddush cup, a menorah, an esro case, a yad for Torah reading. The more he thought about it, the more excited he got. He rather impatiently waited for his father to reach up and grab the gift off the shelf. And yet, to his utter surprise, his father, when he reached up, he took a rather small box from the top shelf. From the size of it, it was most certainly not a book, neither a menorah or even a kiddush cup. What might it be, he thought. It's so small. And then it clicked. This is a perfect size box to hold a pocket size Tehillim. He must be getting family heirloom Tehillim. It could be centuries old, he thought. Who knew how many grandparents and great-grandparents davened from this pocket size Tehillim? He was beyond excited. Slowly, his father handed him the box. Binyamin excitedly opened it up, but when he did, he was even more surprised than before. Because inside the box was not a Tehillim. Rather, it was a brand new, but rather dull-looking wristwatch. His inner surprise quickly turned to trepidation, embarrassment, and shame. No doubt tomorrow in school, all his friends and teachers would earnestly ask him what his saintly father had gotten him for his bar mitzvah present. And here, he would have to tell them he got a plain old wristwatch. He knew many of his friends had received special family heirlooms for their bar mitzvah presents from their parents. And after all, he was the eldest son. Shouldn't he have received a special gift, a family heirloom, something unique? Why the boring watch? Why would his father spend money on a watch when he could have given him a special sefer? What was going on? We find ourselves currently in the midst of Sfiras HaOmer, the time period between Pesach and Shavuos. The mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer is in fact found in this week's parsha. U'safartem lechem macharas ha-shabbas, miyom haviyachem es omer ha-tinufa, sheva shabbosos, timimos tiena. And you shall count for yourselves from the day after Pesach, the first day of Pesach for Shabbos, when you bring the Omer, 7 complete weeks. Sfira is 7 weeks long. And the question is why? Why do we need Sfira Sa'omer? I understand that it would not have been made sense and appropriate for the Jews to leave Egypt and immediately after Pesach to receive the Torah. That would have been too quick. Would have been abrupt. They needed some time, obviously, for being free and Jewish to sink in before they underwent the transformation process of receiving the Torah. Things need to simmer, to build up in a healthy, slow fashion. We needed some time from leaving Egypt before we receive the Torah at Sinai. You should know, even though the NFL recently cut away a preseason game, right now it's currently 3 preseason games and 17 regular season games, but they obviously didn't do away with the entire preseason training camp because everyone needs time to prepare for a big event, for a big day. And the Jews here, too, they also needed time to prepare. But why specifically through Sefirah, through counting? Why do they have to count each day? Even more so, let Beis Din, Let the high court count. During the times of the temple, in fact, there was a special mitzvah, a special commandment on Beis Din to count themselves. Well, why make each person count? We all know in 7 weeks after the first day of Passover is Shavuos. We'll put it in our calendars. We'll set reminders. Why do we need to specifically count? There are numerous answers and approaches to this question. However, I want to offer one approach this evening that I think is specifically, particularly meaningful and relevant to the experience of modern man. Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, one of the greatest minds of the 20th century, Talmud Chacham, a philosopher, and much more, has an obvious yet insightful analysis of the reality of the Jewish people at the time of the Exodus. The Jews were slaves. They, their parents, their grandparents, their great-grandparents, their great-great-grandparents, all born and died into slavery. They had absolutely no concept what freedom looked or felt like. And says Rabbi Soloveitchik, perhaps more than anything else, the thing a slave has the least grasp on is time. A slave has no recognition of time. A slave has no appreciation of the meaning of an hour, a day. There's no point ever looking at your watch. Is it almost 5 o'clock? Can I go home soon? Because whether it's 5 p.m. or 8 p.m. or 2 a.m., the master can demand the slave to do whatever he wants. Always, no matter the hour, time means nothing. The slave is totally at the will of his master. And yet now, after centuries of slavery, the Jews are becoming free. And all of a sudden, they're going to become the masters of their time. But how do you teach someone who has gone from rags to riches overnight how to manage their wealth? To not squander it on meaningless and trivial pursuits? The answer? Make them count it. Make them realize that each dollar spent, each day gone by, is significant. In order for the Jews to transform from a nation of slaves to become a free people worthy to receive the Torah at Sinai, they had to begin to count. Each and every day is meaningful. Each and every day is unique. Each and every day is important. The free man, the man of God, realizes that more than saffron, bitcoins, palladium, or antimatter, the most precious commodity in the universe is time. And yet, modern man, with all of our technological advances, all designed to save us time, effort, to free us up from everything holding us back, from everything that took up our time, more than anything else, we have less time than ever. Email, which is designed to save the time and effort from having to buy postage, drop a letter in the mailbox, and wait a few weeks for a response, now consumes hours of our days. Texting, which was designed to be a quick and easier way to communicate than having to make phone calls or even send an email, now serves as a constant distraction from the conversations that we are trying to have face-to-face. The smartphone, which was designed to be your own personal secretary to make your appointments for you, to keep up to date on the things you needed to know, now consumes every spare second of our time. The constant barrage of emails, texts, news updates, videos, pictures, games, and God knows what else has turned modern man into an oversized walking cell phone case. A recent study showed that the average person touches their phone over 2,600 times per day. We have no time left. No time for ourselves. We seemingly have forfeited our mastery over our time to anything and everything. And here we are, in the midst of Sfiras HaOmer, when every year God reminds us, listen, my dear child, your time, your days, your hours, your minutes, your seconds, your life, it's precious. It is invaluable. And it's up to you. It's up to you to make it count. No one, not Beis Din, not your boss, not your rabbi, not your parents, not your friends, not your spouse, not your kids, no one is able to count for you. You have to make your days count yourself. You have to demonstrate that you know what it means to be free, to choose to use our time for meaningful and lasting endeavors. Back to our story with a little Binyamin Kamenetsky and his bar mitzvah gift. His father could tell that his son was puzzled and thrown off by the rather strange gift. So he gently turned to him and said, Binyamin, this watch right here is the most important possession you now have, because it allows you to keep track of the most important commodity anyone has, time. Wear this watch always, and you will learn to treasure and value the days, the hours, the minutes, and even the seconds of your precious life. Whether or not we at our own Bar Bat Mitzvah received a watch as a gift, but each and every one of us have been given the gift of time since the day we were born. And if we listen closely, if you go into a dark room, close the doors where it's quiet, and put our wrist or part of our body to our chest, we can almost hear the tick of our own internal watch, the beating of our heart, reminding us with each pulse just how precious our limited time here on planet Earth is. I want to close with a blessing that each and every one of us to not just make these days of Sfira count, but even going forward to appreciate the endless potential for good and godliness that we can fill our days with. And God willing, if we do so, we will merit to all stand together this Shavuos and be worthy of receiving the Torah this year, this most unique and truly extraordinary time of Tavshin Pei Aleph 5781, a.k.a. 2021. Good Shabbos, everybody.
Yashar Koach, Rabbi. Very nice.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for coming.
Don't hang up. I won't. I've got our voice.
Thank you, everyone, for coming. I hope everyone is well. We express our unique, sincere tefillot and prayers for all the people in Klai Yisrael who need our prayers, but specifically in this evening for the having in mind those in Israel who were affected by the tragedy today and this evening, this past evening in Meron. So I wish
Rabbi. Excuse me, Rabbi and people, I have something that I need to say. Eileen Feeder, and I was just reading, the official said, the police said, people should rest in peace and get better, but the police said that these huge crowds, they could not enforce the coronavirus restrictions. When are the Orthodox Jews going to understand this is a horrible abomination? I'm sorry. No one mentioned their part. That's the truth.
It's very sad.
Why didn't anyone notice this and not say a word? Is it okay? Because these people were not abiding the law. If it was somebody else or Palestinians, they would go to jail. These people don't abide the law. They're killing us in every state of the union and every country.
It's very sad. We're very affected. We got kids who live there, of course, but to have a gathering of that size under these circumstances at this time, and they couldn't enforce the law.
they would have let them.
It's a horrible tragedy.
It's a horrible thing what happened. Maybe rest in peace. I'm sure they're good people, but they don't think. Many of you don't mention the pandemic. I don't understand how you can like ignore it like it doesn't exist when it's, I just can't understand anybody feeling that way. And that's why I can't go to shul, and that's why I don't want my husband to go to shul. And anybody that's not Orthodox, they're not in a shul. So there has to be a reason. That's all I have to say.
Okay, Eileen, if I can just address that, I agree that having 100,000 people gathering, even if vaccinated, in those kinds of close quarters is just insanity. But when you take it to our shul, I just have to respond that we could not be more conscious and more careful in everything we do about the existence and the threat of this virus. And if you came, if you just dropped by, you would see how far apart people are sitting, how careful we are with everything that we're doing, and how much we care not to have anybody impacted by the virus. So I think it's a little bit of a sweeping statement, but
I don't think it was at all.
To jump in, I'm gonna request that this conversation, if it would be continued, to be continued offline. But I definitely can say on behalf of myself and my own teachers and rabbinic leadership who I look up to for guidance and counsel, that we absolutely take the virus extremely carefully and seriously, and in no way, shape, or form would we ever do anything in our shul or in our community. I cannot vouch or say what goes on in other communities and other peoples. That's not my, I have no jurisdiction or no ability to impact or influence, but I can say that from our community and from my teachers and my tradition, or the teachers who I follow and look up to for guidance, we take every precaution beyond what is required or recommended from the CDC, beyond what is recommended from the local health agencies, to be careful, because in genuine Judaism, the most important and most precious thing, which we just said, is life. That's it. The highest value is the value for life, more than anybody else in the world.
Why don't they follow the?
I cannot make excuses.
Someone else.
I can't make excuses or answer for anybody else. But I can tell you that from my tradition and from what I believe to be genuine Judaism. And I can't tell you what anyone else does. I can't vouch. I can't explain. I can't back up. I can't accuse. I just, I'm not there. And I can't accuse. I do think they're responsible, but I cannot vouch for whatever basis they have for their activities. But I can tell you that the position of what I believe to be genuine Judaism is that we absolutely value life and safety and health above all else. And we would never, if there was any threat to people's lives coming to shul, we would shut it down immediately. We would never, anybody has ever risk anyone's life to have shul in any shape or form. Zero. So it could be there are different denominations who choose to practice Judaism differently right now during this pandemic, but we are 100% following the strictest medical guidance and how we operate our shul. As a matter of fact, you should know that I was on a meeting this past week for the CRC regarding discussing the reopening and, you know, of our shuls in, you know, easing restrictions potentially. And there were medical experts, doctors there who were top of the field in Northwestern. One of the doctors, he's one of the infectious disease doctors at Northwestern, and other doctors as well. And they recommended X, and like, you know, really, really, we could do X at this point, and really could we be more lenient. And Rabbi Reese pushed back. He's like, I don't care. He's like, we have to be more careful than what the medical experts say, because we value life more than the medical field does, because that is the utmost and important value in Judaism. Now, I can't control, I can't vouch for, I can't impact communities, for sure not in Israel, definitely not here in America, but we, in our community, in LJC, I think we are a shining example of what it means to be a shul which takes our Judaism seriously and the virus seriously. We do everything we can with masking and distancing and disinfecting and everything else to make sure that we are fully engaged in our Judaism, but also fully cognizant and aware of the dangers of the pandemic and the preciousness and value of human life. And I'm going to end the conversation here right now, but I encourage anyone who has any questions about anything in regards to this or anything else about anything that goes on our show, feel free to approach me, to talk to me. I would request no one attack anyone else in this room. If anyone wants to yell at anybody, please feel free to. I could be anyone's beating board. But feel free to reach out, and I wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos and a good evening.
Thank you.
Thanks, Reverend.